Welcome to the bookshelf. Tonight is the second of three episodes dedicated to Pivot Spokane. Pivot Spokane is Spokane's storytelling collective, and they had a public appearance on Thursday, May 3rd at the Washington Cracker Factory. Six people read stories, and last episode we heard from Mike Malsom and Micah Maloney. Tomorrow night, we'll hear from Samantha Wolfeil and Nathan Weinbender. Tonight we hear from Mallory Mittaker and Aaron Robinson. Tying it all together is Mark Robbins. Many of us know him from the casino commercials at which he plays the nerd, and he took some of that persona into hosting this show. So let's join him as he mentions what's just gone on and what's about to go on.
This is so poorly timed, and I don't know why I'm going to say this, but I had a joke. I didn't write very many jokes, but this was a joke that I was going to tell before Micah came up, where he told the story about the guy while I was riding the motorcycle while I was listening to Gypsy Eyes, and I was going to say, which is why I call our next guest Gypsy Eyes. It would have been hilarious. Since I'm being awkward, another thing is that I'm not a hugger. I'm sort of one of those like, hi. Hi. And so I committed to hugging everybody tonight just because I thought it was funny. So anyway, I'm sorry. Micah and Crystal have great parties, and recently I realized, and Mike and I were talking about this, that our next guest was at one of those parties. But there's a problem with the program. Our first speaker was Mike Malsom, then we had Micah Maloney, and next we have Mallory, it's actually Mittaker, it's not Whitaker. Mallory went to Lewis and Clark High School, and she was one of the cool kids. And when I say that, I mean from the staff's perspective. But really, she was one of those kids who just, she was just precocious and in this kind of confident adult way that I just felt sorry that she had to be there for 4 years, you know? And it's just one of those people where I was like, man, I hope when she grows up, I run into her at a cocktail party. And I did that. And so please welcome Mallory Mittaker.
Carlos took my watch. Okay, he didn't so much physically take it, he asked for it. But that still did not change the fact I did not want to give it to him. Standing in the Blue Range Mountains, somewhere near the Arizona-New Mexico border, with 42 eyes staring at me in my next move, I thought, better give it up. I unhooked its plastic band. Tears started streaming down my face and landing on its perfect but unwaterproofed screen. It was 11:04 a.m., and for the next 3.5 days, I wasn't going to know what time it was, and that bothered me. I gave it to Carlos. His red and blonde beard flickered in the sunlight, almost emulating flames. Oh, how I wished it would have caught on fire, and I could have taken my watch back and not had to go through the next 3.5 days. That were yet to unfold. Solo is the last 3.5 days of a 25-day-long backpacking orientation at Prescott College. When you're admitted to Prescott College, they send you a very nice admissions letter, and attached to that is a very thorough questionnaire with pictures about which orientation experience is right for you. There's a yoga retreat, which in hindsight would have been mellow in comparison. There was an equine adventure with 5 students galloping off into the Grand Canyon. Would have been great. Then there was a month-long backpacking trip. In the picture, everyone looked a little disheveled and dirty, but like they'd had a good time. My fear of horses and having a 1,000-pound animal steering me down the Grand Canyon ruled out equine. My horrible flexibility kind of gave me the idea that backpacking would be the best bet. And when I got to the camp to meet all my fellow backpackers, they were fit as hell, like they'd actually gone backpacking before. And not just a half mile up the gravel driveway of Camp Reed, like with a backpack full of nothing but candy, but like a real expedition, like overnight in the woods with no bathroom. So, Andrew had perfectly toned and tanned calves. He had gaiters, and I spent half of the time trying to figure out what they were used for. And he had a beard that belonged in an REI magazine. Oliver knew everything about the flora and fauna of the desert, and he was drinking his yerba mate tea out of a gourd that he hand-carved. Luke had major surfer vibes, and he said things like, shredding the gnar, and send it, bro. And I'd always be like, yeah, sure, you got it. And Hannah and Sarah had chocolate and tea, which is not why I became friends with them, but it was an added bonus. There was 20 of us in all, and two fearless leaders, Carlos and Allie. And we all found friendship on the trail quickly, along with a lot of cacti. And Carlos had brought along with him a mini banjo. And I don't know if any of you have ever seen a mini banjo, but it's the cutest in the banjo family. Kind of like I am in my own family, so I instantly related to that. For 21 blissful, albeit very smelly days, our daily routine consisted of waking up just a little too early, in my personal opinion, then hiking and navigating the Blue Range, telling stories and riddles that no one really knew the answer to, but we'd be like, sure, this'll kill 3 hours. Then we'd get into camp and set up these tarp shelters, and we'd cook dinner together in teams, we'd lay out and fall asleep to the campfire and songs of mini banjo. Everyone also had a job on the trail, and it was my job, my glorious job, to carry the trowel shovel for digging holes for the restroom. And after 21 days, schedules start to emerge in my head, patterns. And no matter how many times after 21 days you say, the shovel's going to be over here, you still get woken up at 6:32 and 7:45 with a, where is it? Where is it? So after 21 days, we were getting very close. We continued to hike further and further north, and our days began to get colder. It had been almost a month at this point. And our summer-like weather had turned to a crisp fall, and our once horrible BO had just kind of become a natural stench that we were totally used to at this point. Our canyon views had turned to forest. And it was at this time when Allie took all of our reading materials and Carlos took my damn watch. And being a runner and a tad OCD, I like knowing the time. Right now I can tell you it's 7:50 p.m. and I like knowing that. It gives me a sense of place and time, if you will. And I questioned, why are you taking these things from us? And they said it was to focus on simply being, not to focus on how much time we had left, but to simply be. And I lost it at that point. Simply be what exactly? They spaced us 300 yards apart, our campsites, so we couldn't see each other. And I thought to myself, this is the first time, Mal, that's how I refer to myself, Mal, this is the first time in your life where you are not going to see or talk to another person in 3.5 days. And as someone who loves to talk, I was genuinely concerned about my well-being. And to add insult to major injury at that point, I'm also terrified of the dark. So I had that going for me as well. And did I mention they took my watch? So I hiked out with Oliver and Andrew because their campsites were next to mine. I took one last look at Andrew's calves. They were nice. And I headed to my spot. And I will never forget the land there. There was a crystal clear creek running through and two giant spruce trees that I named Bruce and Wayne. The first being, if you combine blue and spruce, it makes Bruce. The second being, I thought Batman on my side would be a good idea in case anything went down. The first night, I made it through. I kept my headlamp on. I was just like, self-talk, you're doing great. And I woke up the next morning with my sleeping bag covered in dew because my tarp shelter was inadequate. And I heard a really loud noise. It was just after sunrise, and I couldn't place what it was. It sounded like hammering or rocks being thrown together or a woodpecker gone mad, but I didn't know if woodpeckers were in the desert, so I had no idea what it was. And it startled me. It actually scared me a lot. And so my sleeping bag was toast, and so I put it on Bruce Wayne to kind of dry out in the sun. And I thought, hey, this is kind of a perfect distraction from being alone and petrified. So I decided to do laundry. And I was filthy, and so I thought, great. And I took everything out of my backpack and brought it down to the creek. My clothes, my hat, my socks that no longer resembled socks because of all the mud and clay and dirt that was just kind of in there from the miles before. And I began to wash everything meticulously and almost obsessively to see how clean I could get it. And this went on for 2.5 days. Every time I heard that noise in the morning, I did laundry. And at this point on day two, I made a rap about laundry and I was singing about laundry. And anytime I was like, yo, Mal, this is kind of scary, I would see like, oh, how clean can I really get this? And at one point, it got so bad that I thought about trying to find Oliver or Andrew. It sounded like an animal, and I thought it was kind of coming really close. But instead, I did more laundry. And I decided to reenact every musical that I'd ever learned in my entire life. So The Sound of Music was my go-to. And on day three, I kind of had this realization, like, I don't think I'm having this spiritual journey that I'm supposed to be having on this solo. I have not found a love for whittling spoons. I didn't find my chi or center myself in meditation for the last 3.5 days. And all I've really learned is that I hate solos a lot, and I am a horrible singer, and I should not pursue a rapping career after this. And it was really hard for me to swallow that. And so finally, day three hit, and they took my watch, so I don't know about what time I had this realization. I didn't actually know if anyone was coming to get me, like they'd remembered. So it was somewhere in the afternoon, and I literally waited like a lost puppy. Like, my heart was pounding. I worried that no one would come. And finally, I saw, just off the corner of Bruce Wayne, I saw Andrew and his calves, and I just gave him the biggest hug I ever have given someone, the greatest hug, and just instantaneously started sobbing. And we came back that night to the camp, and Carlos gave me my watch back finally. And I just remember sitting around, and it hit me that what I had learned from solo was not how much I hated solo, but how much I value the kindness and the daily interaction of just everyone. And going to the grocery store and talking to the person checking out the groceries, or sitting next to someone on a plane, you know, I'd love to hear your life story, whether you want to give it to me or not, kind of a deal. And just hearing, you know, mini banjo songs and sharing a laugh, those are the things I hold dearest in the world. And the noise, by the way, was Andrew. And he had spent his entire solo building a sauna, which we later all enjoyed. And because of the steam, I had to take my watch off. And I wasn't even bothered.
Ironically, at the most recent Story Slam, where they draw names out of a hat at the Bartlett, it was last time, and you tell stories, you know, based on the theme that night or whatever, I told a story about myself on a solo at the end of a long trip. The only difference is that I wasn't there by choice. But you should go to these other, I mean, these events are great, but those Story Slams are also great. I think that's everything. I want to make sure, yeah, that's everything. So our next storyteller is one I have never met. I haven't heard her story before. I met her right before we got started. She is a producer at Crim 2, and I know that she hurt her finger pretty badly yesterday, which is why, I don't know if she's going to talk about that or not. I'm sorry, Aaron, if I'm stealing your thunder. So let's just get this started, and please welcome Aaron Robinson.
It looks way gnarlier than it actually is. Warning, warning, stand back, stabbing or shooting. Warning, warning, stand back, stabbing or shooting, Freeman High School. Those three words made my heart drop into my stomach. This was the one thing I never wanted to have to deal with when I went to work. I work overnight at Crim 2, so I get up at 1 a.m. and I go to work at 2. A police scanner sits on my desk, and I often hear all these calls about the little tragedies that are happening around our city. Most of the time, it's nothing too bad. It doesn't affect the public. It's a car accident. Maybe it's a heart attack. Sometimes I do hear that shooting or stabbing call in the middle of the night, and luckily, it's typically just a false alarm. That morning, it rang out at about 10:30 in the morning, and that's always kind of a bad sign. We had just finished our four-hour morning show, and my anchor, Brittany Bailey, walked into the newsroom. The scanner rang out again. Spokane Police Department, Spokane County Sheriff's Office, Washington State Patrol, Air One. Oftentimes when we hear all of these called out, it's a training, so we kind of don't really think anything of it. But this time it was different because we heard that location on the end of it, Freeman High School. Chaos just erupted in the newsroom, but it was kind of a quiet chaos. My reporter, Rob Harris, walked in and said, "Hey, how's it going?" And Brittany goes, "Well, are we sure this is a training or is it real? I don't know." When they do those trainings, they don't name the location, and that's how we know not to send a crew out there. But this time, we heard that those three words, Freeman High School, and we knew we had to get everybody there as soon as possible. So Rob walks in, he's kind of, "Hey, how's it going?" And I said, "I need you to grab your stuff and head to Freeman High School right now." And he goes, "Why, what's going on?" He tends to get a little sassy when I send him to breaking news. And I said, "You know, I think there's been a shooting at Freeman High School, I need you to go." So he turned just white as a ghost. Rob and I went to school together, and we took a class called Television and Social Justice. And in this class, we analyzed tragedies and how to react to them, how the media affects people in these times of crisis. And we talked about school shootings. We talked about Columbine High School and how the media really screwed up that time, what we can learn from those things. And this was the one thing that we really dreaded ever having to report. So Rob went on his way, and the rest of my reporting staff started to trickle into the newsroom. And we said, "Everybody just grab your stuff and get out. Go to Freeman High School." A few minutes later, we had confirmed that, yes, there had been a shooting. And we went live on air. We were on air for 14 hours that day. My job was to confirm information and run back and forth between the newsroom and the anchor desk to make sure that they knew what was going on and could say it on TV so people at home knew what was going on. I worked until 6 p.m. that night. And at that time, my boss said, Aaron, go home, get some sleep, because you have to come right back to this in the morning. So I fell into bed when I got home, and I got up, and I came right back to work at 2 a.m. And we spent the day planning out our coverage. Our morning meeting happens at about 10:30 every day. And unfortunately, our coverage plan was dictated for us for the next few days. My boss gathered everybody and started the meeting by saying, are you guys okay? Just as this is tragic for the communities involved, it sucks to have to report on this stuff. There's no simpler way to say it. He looked around the room and said, these next few days are going to be difficult, but it's our job to get the facts, confirm the information, provide it to the people, and also help the community heal. And with that, you guys need to heal as well. It often takes me about a day or two to comprehend what has happened in these tragic situations. I'm kind of used to them, unfortunately. It's just part of my job. It wasn't until that morning meeting, almost 24 hours later, that I really understood the depth of what had happened. Because in those moments, my first thing is to gather all the information, put it on Facebook, put it on our website. I don't really have time to comprehend the crisis at hand. The first big tragedy that I ever had to cover as a journalist was the Orlando shooting in Florida. I used to work weekends, and I was always the first one in the newsroom. And so I turned over and I grabbed my phone as I woke up that morning, and I saw the notifications that there had been a mass shooting at a gay nightclub. So I threw some clothes on and I ran to the newsroom and I started putting out all the information on our website, on our social media pages, because that's always my first reaction. Just get the information out, confirm it and get it out. It wasn't until about 12 hours later that day that I sat down and said, holy shit, this is awful. I have a gay brother who had been out dancing at a nightclub the night before. Could have easily had been him that had been targeted. But there was this weird sense of reality because it was so far away that it didn't really feel like it affected me. But it did. This is awful. I don't want to report on this. People often tell me that if the news just covered the happy stories, we'd be a lot better off. And while I wish I could do that, it's just not a reality, unfortunately. We have to tell you what's going on in the world. It's the only way that you stay informed. That's how change happens. That's how we move forward. And that was the case with Freeman High School. We had to tell that story. And unfortunately, it was terrible. But there's always something positive that comes after tragedy, and it's the stories of heroism, hearing the stories of communities coming together and helping each other heal. And in the days after Freeman, we got to tell those stories. And I'm thankful that I got to tell those stories. It's the reason I got into this field. So every day I go to work and I hear that scanner call, and it gives me a little bit of a fright every time I hear that stabbing or shooting call. Luckily, it's usually a false alarm. But when daylight comes and I hear it, my stomach just always drops. Thank you.
Why are you so much quieter? I'm just kidding. That was great. Thank you, Aaron. It's nice to meet you. I'm sorry about your finger, although it sounds like it was self-inflicted. So, yeah. Slammed her finger in the door, in the car door. Yeah.
More of the easy banter of host Mark Robbins as he was tying together the different stories of Pivot Spokane, which took place a couple weeks ago at the Washington Cracker Building. And tonight we heard stories from Mallory Mittaker and Aaron Robinson. Last night, we had heard stories from Mike Malsom and Micah Maloney. Join us tomorrow night for the conclusion of these stories from Pivot Spokane, as we'll hear from two Inlander writers, Samantha Wolfile and Nathan Weinbender.